All right. So, to start off, why don't all of you introduce yourselves and tell me who you are, where you're from, when you were born, and where you're located right now.
I can go. I'm Claire Hazlett. I was born in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, in February 24th, 1998. I'm currently kind of in between places, so I'm l living temporarily in Richmond, Virginia, but my permanent residence is in Bethany, West Virginia. Was
Great.
that
Yeah, that's great.
cool?
My name is Carol Daniels. I was born and raised in Randolph County, West Virginia, born in Elkins, West Virginia, on January 14th, 1968. And
My name is Ed Daniels. I'm born and raised here in Randolph County, West Virginia. I've always had the interest in the outdoors and would love to be able to share it with others.
Nice. And are you in Randolph County today?
Yes.
All right, so Clara, why don't you tell me a little bit about your background, and any pertinent details of your family that led you to an interest in forest farming?
I grew up on my family's farm in Brook County, West Virginia, and that's a farm that's been in my family for, I guess I'm a third generation there now. And my grandfather was a dairy farmer, and my parents just had like kind of a homesteady type farm. We didn't do a whole lot of like cultivation other than just like corn and vegetables in the garden. And chickens and goats occasionally. So I didn't really learn a whole lot about farming or forest farming when I was young, but just growing up on a farm, I was outside all the time and in the gardens or mostly in the woods. I didn't really like gardening because I had to weed. I didn't get to do any of the fun stuff. I just had to pick up the discard plants. So I didn't really grow any appreciation for gardening much when I was younger, but I always loved being in the woods. And the property where I grew up on was strip mined and deep mined throughout like the last century. And so it's seen a lot of degradation environmentally. And so I always grew up like playing in the little orange streams around the property and just kind of seeing the invasives kind of creep in and take over. And especially in the last, I think it's always been like that, but in the last 10 years, since I've been more aware of how that process isn't actually natural and like how the forest wasn't always that way, I've become more conscious and concerned about the trajectory of the health of the forest and on the farm and also throughout West Virginia. And so from there, I mean I've always loved the outdoors, and then I studied in environmental studies and international relations in college. And then I think my interest in forest farming really like sparked. I didn't even know what it was really until I did the Smithsonian internship with the Folklife Center about American ginseng, and that just kind of opened my eyes to what the potential of the forests in our region and what they could look like and what they have looked like in the past and what kind of steps we can take to kind of reverse some of that degradation and restore the health of our forests and also preserve those traditions that have come out of like a human relationship with the land in our region. So
Nice.
like practical steps that I can take to restoring the forest on my family's land, and then also sharing that with other people. And I learn best by, like, hands-on experience. So this has been a really great way to just kind of directly learn from people who know and apply it directly to practice that I'm trying to fulfill and on the farm in Brook County.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the apprenticeship and what your sessions have been like, what you've been learning, the area of focus. This is for all of you, question for all of you.
I can go, or Ed and Carol, what do you think?
Well, you go first. And
okay. Yeah. So we started off virtual, and that was a little tricky because, I mean, like I said, I really like the hands-on stuff. So I was like, oh man, like, we're just going to talk about it. But we talked about it, but then, like, we talked about, like, how to get started planting ginseng and golden seal. But then they sent me a package of ginseng seeds and golden seal rhizomes in the springtime. So I was able to kind of, like, and they also sent me a book, which helped me, like, helped guide me through some of those practices. And we went about, like, exploring different sites on the farm. So I would, like, take a video of a site that I thought maybe would be appropriate for planting those botanicals. And they would tell me, like, oh yeah, that seems like a good place, or maybe you should try a different place. So based on, like, the other species that were there and kind of, like, the direction of the slope and just all of those different characteristics that you're looking for in planting those wild plants. So we did that, and then I've been able to go up to Shady Grove twice so far. And in those visits, we've done more hands-on stuff. And the first time I went, we were planting hemp. And then the second time I went, we were doing more ginseng work. And we also did some other, like, homesteading type activities. It was raining for a lot of the weekend. So we did some canning and mushroom hunting, and also just worked on like ginseng, picking the berries and stuff like that.
Nice.
I thought it was nice whenever she sent us little videos or pictures of her farm, her family farm. That way we could, like she said, identify different locations or give her suggestions, but also she gave us some pictures of things for us to identify whether it was companion plants or not. So it was nice to see a little bit of the property where she's going to be planting and see where some of these plants and seeds are going to be home to her in the future.
Yeah,
that's very cool.
Virtual part of it there helped us because we did not travel to her farm, and we just told her the general direction, the northeast facing slope, and told her the best terrain, you know, gently sloped without having much water, moist is good, and then to look for the companion plants and what companion plants that she may find that would be closer in near the ginseng. And so, you know, whenever you bring new product or new life into an area, it's also good to examine thoroughly what's there currently. You know, of course, her property looked very well, and it suited the area very well. But I believe someone may have, in the years past, dug sang there on that property, and there still may be some, because that area just looked really very similar to most places I would find sang in the wild. So I felt that she did select a very good place to do her little botanical path. And we tried to assist her as best we could when she came to our farm to show her what our methods are. There's different approaches for everyone. I mean, if you go into the Midwest, you'll find people plowing it, disking it, and doing large farms. That's not our approach. You'll find some who do similar and in the woods to create a woods grown. But the wild sang and the genetics of that, we try to use what's called a dipple bar or a tree spade and plant them one at a time. That way there is a little more resistance to the root, and it doesn't get real big real quick to look like commercial grown sang. You know, as you transplant sang from the wild into a new area, that can happen there, but different ways to do that. And we taught her our method, and I feel that she has a very good grasp on that and would probably follow through with the same.
Nice. And what are some of those companion plants that ginseng grows with?
You asking me?
Yeah, or anyone really, but you mentioned it, so.
Well, you know,
go ahead.
One of the best defenders of a ginseng plant is the nettle, the stinging nettle. A lot of times some of the animals and the people, humans, will avoid those areas due to the fact of the outcome. But you also find it maidenhair ferns, golden seal, may apples, Indian turnip. There's a lot of things that we'll find growing in these damp, moist, shaded areas.
Mm-hmm. Ed, why don't you know, I know we did a pretty extensive interview, but why don't you talk about what role this tradition has played in your everyday life?
Well, you know, from a young kid, it's how I bought my school clothes. Started with shoes and then my jeans, and therefore, as I got a little older, I was seeking a used VW bug. And a guy had it for sale forever, and no one was interested but me. And he finally come down to $500, and I thought, boy, this is the year I'm going to get my car. And I went out, and I dug and dug and dug, and I worked every evening after school and accumulated enough ginseng to buy that car. So my first car was purchased from the sang and some other roots, too. I wouldn't say just sang. I sold some golden seal that year, or yellow root, and I did get the money from the wild plants that I'd harvested, and it sort of set the tone for me to continue to do so throughout the rest of my life, not always for the monetary part of it, but something to put back. As I acquired property, I decided I wanted to fill my property up with those wild plants. And never really thought about the medicinal side of it. I just enjoyed looking at how beautiful a ginseng plant or a golden seal, ramps. They're all very nice in their time, you know, when the fruit's on or the berries and the leaves are just vibrant green. To me, it's better than any flower I could plant. So, and at the same time, you know, I acquired quite a wild botanical area, and we had some rental property there, and their young boy managed to go out and dig pretty much all the ginseng that I had that was up that year. And that was sort of detrimental because I'd worked years and years to accumulate such a place. And so in the last 6 years, we found and bought a 7 years. We bought a farm there in Pickens, and we've managed to transplant most of the botanicals that I had planted, the wild roots and such, in what I feel is a safer location for now.
Mm-hmm. What is next in your apprenticeship? What are you still hoping to get to that you haven't been able to cover yet?
And that's your question is directed to me?
That could be for you or Clara.
Okay.
Yeah, for me, I'm interested. Hopefully the next time I'm able to get up there, I'd like to get some rootlets and plant them on the property in Brook County, because in the springtime we planted from seed, and I hope they come up. I'm kind of nervous just because I haven't always had a green thumb in my past, so I'm feeling like this is kind of risky business, but apparently the rootlets have a better survival rate, and I'll be able to, I'd really like to, like, kind of see which ones do better, like the seed or the rootlets, and plant those in a different location maybe. And now that I am a little bit more familiar, because I planted the seed and the golden seal rhizomes without having met with them hands-on to like see their methods for planting, And so now that I've seen it and done some work hands-on, I think I'm more confident in planting the rootlets and like finding another good location up on the farm. So that's something I'm really looking forward to.
And do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I was going to add to that. One of the things I would like to work with Claire on yet would be some of the things that she's spoke of as far as the seed. But one of the things you got to remember when planting ginseng seed, if you have a lot of oaks or hickory, let's say hardwood nut trees, there's a lot of squirrels and chipmunks, and they are detrimental to the seed. They like the ginseng seed. Fortunately, in our area where our farm is located, we don't have too much more of the maples. So I don't have the squirrels and the chipmunks that some people would have. So as we think about planting more in the future of the seed, that would be something to take into consideration. Deer do browse off the young ones. So we've went over with Clara as she plants even her rootlets. You know, if a rootlet gets nibbled off by a deer in its first 2 years, it probably won't come back. I don't know the real reason on that, but once it makes it to a two prong, if a deer nibbles it off, it has a better chance of survival. I've spoke a couple times to Jim McGraw from WVU, and he agrees. You know, deer browse is a big problem, even up around WVU. So brushing it up, as we call it, by putting limbs crossways in around the plants to deter the deer from sticking their nose down there and just browsing at their own free will, has deterred them a lot. And we're seeing a much better success rate on those rootlets and our adult rhizomes as we do this. And that's an approach that we have shared with Claire, and I feel that she'll be able to do very similar to the same in her area, and it would probably give her a much better percentage of survival rate of seeds and plants or rhizomes.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Another thing that I'm looking forward to, and I don't know if we'll be able to achieve this just because of all the challenges of education this year, but I'm really interested in their plant-to-seed program, and that's one of the reasons that I really wanted to work with them. And we've talked about it a good deal, but I think it would be really neat to be able to observe that interaction in a classroom, even if, I mean, ideally not virtual, just because I feel like that changes a lot of the dynamic. But I think it would be really cool to see how they convey that, that this type of subject and this type of information to children and try to get them inspired, because I'm really interested in like the in outdoor education and outreach in that realm, and I'd like to replicate that in my area. So I would love to observe that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how do you see the apprenticeship impacting the sustainability of this tradition?
For me?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's huge. Like, I would have been too nervous definitely to invest in ginseng or golden seal or other medicinals without having some sort of guidance. And although I know a couple people here and there, especially through the Smithsonian internship, I really haven't met too many people who have been willing to kind of share this knowledge, because it is very labor intensive, and there's like there's risk to sharing that knowledge, and I think it's super important to have some sort of guidance in this practice, and through this I've been able to share it with people in my own community, in my family. Like I planted with my on my brother's property, who shares part of the family farm, but I planted with him and his son, who's like 4 years old, and his son was super excited about it, and I've been able to share it with friends, and it's already been really a great way to share this knowledge, and I definitely wouldn't have been able to or been confident enough to get started on it on my own.
That's great. Ed, do you have anything to add to that?
Yes. one of the obstacles that we've all come up against is the this virus and doing things as we had planned. A lot of the plant to seed program, not on my side, but other sides, have been canceled, and I do understand why. Everything from the West Virginia Herb Association and different meetings of conferences to teach and to get people involved into it, as well as the school. But I have been approached here in the last week or so of some folks with some young kids that's now homeschooling and have asked to come to the farm and do small segments of an hour or two to get involved with getting their hands dirty. You know, whether it's ginseng, whether it's golden seal, even the gardening with our high tunnel that we invested in this year, they want these kids to learn something, and a great time to do so. But the plant to seed program, I've approached the county schools, and right now they're not really receptive to having folks come in and do such programs. Even the youth groups and the different places that we had worked with in the past, everything's getting a little tighter. Actually, here in our county, I'm a bus driver, and three bus drivers now have the coronavirus, just confirmed yesterday. So the scare's still here. It's, you know, sort of building up momentum. We do want to do these class outdoor sessions. I feel that we can do a distancing and do smaller groups. And we're looking at doing like six kids at a time. And what we've been approached with is folks who live in development communities. They've all decided not to send their kids to school anymore, and they're going to homeschool them. And each parent in that development is taking a turn of their day to do some kind of a learning session, whether it be take them to a cave or teach them how to fish, tie a fly, or plant a seed. So we have been approached on that, and we're going to pursue with small groups and keep on going and see if we can't get some more kids into it.
Nice. Yeah, it seems like the virus and the conditions it's brought about in some ways has been more difficult for the apprenticeship, but I really like the idea of sending photos and videos of your land.
I'm going to,
Clara.
I hope I don't overload you.
I just mean Clara sending her photos and videos of patches of land on her farm. It's almost, I'm not sure that would have happened if it weren't for the conditions that the virus brought about.
But it was very helpful. You know, I seen.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Going there, not that I didn't want to go. Don't get me wrong. It actually helps us to visualize what the conditions are, and you know, and every ecosystem is slightly different. But I think she does have a good place to grow some medicinal herbs.
That's great. This is a question for both of you, so maybe Clara could start. What's your hope for the future of this tradition, and what do you think needs to happen to realize that?
I have a lot of hope for the future of tradition, really, and I see it mostly in the in kids, like Ed and Carol do. This summer, I was able to, my partner and I, we ran like a small little 3-day summer day camp on my family's farm, just about like outdoor education. And we didn't do too much about plants other than like just plant walks every now and then. But they were just so excited to be outside and to be getting their hands dirty and doing things, just kind of hands-on and just breathing fresh air. And I think that seeing that really helped me be inspired to continue kind of engaging with the youth of this community, just because, you know, there's so much disappointing news around like this generation of being like so influenced by technology and no one's interested in the outdoors. And I think that although that might be the case right now, I think it's really easily reversible in youth. Maybe not easily, but I think there is a potential for it to be reversible. And I think that that potential lies in just interacting with the outdoors. And I think that learning skills like planting ginseng and medicinals is a really rewarding process. And kids like to see rewards, and they like to see red berries, and they like to see changes in the earth and in different plants because it's exciting. And I think that it has the potential to capture children's attention like other things might not, you know. And I think that, yeah, just in the youth of the West Virginia community, being able to kind of revive that tradition, there's definitely that potential.
Nice. Ed, what do you think?
I think the statement, or I don't know if I'd call it the headline of our program, but plant the seed. I often bring this up. As a bus driver, I'm around a lot of kids. A lot of kids coming from broken families. A lot of kids are being raised by their grandparents. We're in a drug area here in the mountains, and a lot of kids, the statistics of the first through third or fourth grade schoolers is 38% of them are raised by someone other than their parents. Most of them it's their grandparents or great grandparents. Okay. Mm-hmm. So plant a seed. To me, every kid's a seed. If you plant them right and teach them at a young age, you did your part, and eventually they're going to remember that, and they're going to go back to what you taught them. They might sway just a little bit, but they're going to say, wow, you know, I could be planting that ginseng seed, and by the time I get out of school, I'd have money for a car. Or I could plant a garden and raise some tomatoes and sell for $3 a pound. You know, there is opportunities for these kids that are growing up in a deprived life. And not everybody has to have a big farm and equipment to be a farmer. So programs such as this, and my intentions with Plant the Seed is to educate the young, to get them more involved in what's out there, and show them that, again, you don't have to have a lot of money to start something. You can go out there beside your garage and find the right side that's shaded, and you can do a lot of things, even with medicinals. Or you could go out underneath some trees at the edge of your forest and do the same. So, again, you know, I'm trying to put back what I learned in life, but also put back what I took. You know, when I talked about getting that $500 for that first car, I probably took too many pieces of ginseng. And I realized that. But I think I've put back way more than I ever took.
Clara, this is, I think, my last question, but why don't you tell me a little bit more about your plans for a forest farm on your property, your family property?
So I think right now, because I'm kind of back and forth between the property, I haven't been able to spend too much time with it, but ginseng and golden seal, it takes a while for them to come up out of the ground anyway. And also, they're relatively low maintenance plants, you know, like you don't have to, if you're doing it properly, from what I've learned. Because it's on my family's farm, it's nice because I can have different people checking up on it. And it also makes it a more communal effort. My mom is really interested in it, and she grew up on the farm as well, and never really did too much with forest farming or anything, but she's always loved the woods too and just hasn't really known how to kind of revive some of the forest that she's seen degraded. So she's really excited about it, especially because of that cultural and like familial significance that land has in our family. To be able to see it healing and the potential for it to heal is really exciting. So I see that as a really cool familial effort. And like I said, with my brother, he's kind of been able to check up on his little patch behind the house. And I'd like to see that spread throughout the farm. I think we need to do a lot of invasive species control there. And I'd like to see like us getting goats to kind of help with that. And once the invasives have been cleared more or less, which is going to take a while, I'd like to see them replaced with native plants like ginseng, golden seal. And as Ed mentioned, like the places where I found on the farm, I do think are suitable. And I think that ginseng was grown there or just wild there in the past. But there's a lot of places on the property that are just so overgrown with invasives. It's impossible to even look for ginseng or any companion plants that might have been there at one time because it's just autumn olives and bittersweet. And there's a lot of work to do, but I'd like to see the whole property be just transformed and healed and restored through clearing of invasives and then replacing them with the native species. And then eventually having that serve as kind of a center, not a formal center, but like a center for other people to come and learn in the community. So maybe I can do like similar to what Ed and Carol have done with me, of just kind of teaching people who might be interested but don't really know how to start, and giving them a place where they can work hands-on and see the practice and see the results as well. I think that's really important. Like, you can read about the results all you want, but unless you see what a forest can look like when it's been healed, I think it's kind of hard to believe that a place that's so overgrown with invasives can be beautiful again. And I'd really like to see that happen on the farm.
Nice. Was there anything any of you would like to share? Anything else?
I think I'm good.
I thought it was really neat that Clara had an interest in our homesteading style. We do harvest a lot of stuff from the wild, as well as our gardens, and as well as just canning. You know, she took a big interest in that, and she was just like the daughter that, you know, wanted to learn. And it was great that she took the time to spend with us. Even on the rainy days, we figured out something to do. And tried to make it as educational as we could. We're not the sharpest knife in the drawer at everything, but at the same time, we're willing to share what knowledge we have.
That's great. Yeah, it sounds like it's been really fruitful, despite the difficulties with meeting in person at times.
Yeah, that has been challenging, which I'm sure all the apprenticeships, you know, everybody's impacted by this in their daily lives, but it wasn't like, you know, we kind of had a goal and what we were going to be doing at each little workshop and of course, you know, we had to modify and change that. So, you know, hopefully at the end of this program, she's being able to capture the education that we were hoping that she could achieve. You know, we're hoping we can do the best that we can do to help her learn as much as she wants to learn. If I said that correctly.
Nice. Well, thank you all so much. And I know I got Clara's artist profile. I can't remember if I have yours, Ed and Carol.
Carol's okay. Making a note of that right now.
Great. Sorry. So yeah. at some point I'll need to get a photo, either maybe ask you to take some photos, or maybe I can come up next time you guys meet, because I've been doing apprenticeship features of each pair on our blog. So I'll be in touch about that.
Okay. And I have been taking pictures at each, the two times that she's been there. If there's any specific Great. Type of photo, you know, I'm always taking photos. So not only for this program, but just I like to look back on it and see what we've been doing.
Right.
So yeah, I do have photos.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. I'd love to see some of those. Especially some with, Ed and, Clara together.
Oh yes.
That'd be great. I'll show you some of the examples, of other features. So I'll put that in an email.
Okay. And I have been noticing a couple of those, I think like on Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where I've seen them. Yeah. That's pretty nice so that you can show others what other apprentices are doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope it's inspirational. I think it also is good for you guys and for the program to get other people thinking about what kind of apprenticeship they'd like, and then, you know, spread the word about the work that you are doing.
Right.
Well, we appreciate that.
Yeah, of course. Thank you guys so much. I wish this could have happened in person, but so it could these days.
Yeah.
Well, enjoy the rest of your day, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.